The Guardian.
This new health service will be organized on a national scale as a public responsibility. The cost of the service will be met from rates, taxes, and national insurance, and so everyone will pay for it. And everyone will benefit. When you're ill, you won't have to pay for treatment.
Yes, it's the 60th anniversary of the NHS. That was a public announcement from 1948 telling the nation that health treatment would be free. I'm Nick Watt, and on today's Politics Weekly, we'll be looking at new plans drawn up for the NHS. We'll also be discussing the scenes in the Commons when David Cameron produced a leaked letter from the Chief Whip, Jeff Hoon, which embarrassed Gordon Brown at Prime Minister's Questions on Wednesday.
I wanted you to know how much I appreciated all of your help. I trust that it will be appropriately rewarded.
That was David Cameron quoting the Chief Whip, Jeff Hoon. To discuss these matters, I'm joined now by Ivan Lewis, the Health Minister. Ivan, have you been gorging on NHS birthday cakes this week?
Absolutely have. It's been a very, very important week in terms of the future of the NHS, but also in many ways a very interesting week in terms of looking back on the history of what is a great, unique British institution.
We have Polly Toynbee, the Guardian columnist. Polly, you wrote this week that the father of the NHS, Nye Bevan, would be a happy man.
I think that's true. I think this is the golden age. If there ever was one, people always imagined there was in the past. I think it's probably now.
And finally, we have John Carville, the Guardian social affairs editor. John, you wrote this week that the Tories don't seem to think this is a golden age of the NHS.
Well, you wouldn't expect them to think it was. I think in some ways what Aradhasi has done this week is shoot their fox. The report says no more central targets, and they think the whole thing is about central targets. So they're taking a little while to adjust.
Thank you for that. Well, John mentioned Lord Darzai, the health minister and cancer surgeon. Well, he launched a new blueprint for the NHS this week.
The world has changed since the NHS was founded in 1948. The shape of the population, our lifestyles have changed too. New drugs, treatments, and technology are continuously being developed. Quite rightly, people expect more from the NHS.
Lord Darzi there with some 1980s music in the background. His review says more emphasis will be placed on clinical quality and patient choice. And the Health Secretary, Alan Johnson, said there would be public consultation on the draft NHS constitution. Well, we asked Simon Hoggett, The Guardian's parliamentary sketchwriter, to describe the scenes in the Commons when Alan Johnson unveiled the NHS review.
Simon Hoggett, parliamentary correspondent for The Guardian, reporting from Westminster. And this week we had yet another review of the NHS to mark its 60th birthday. Poor old NHS, it has lots of birthdays, and every time all it gets as a present is another wretched review, this time from Lord Darzi, the famous surgeon. And what has Lord Darzi concluded after looking at the whole NHS from top to bottom? He's concluded that it needs to be more responsive to patients. It needs to have shorter waiting times. It needs to plan things ahead. It needs to do everything it should have been doing, and to some extent has been doing, for the past 60 years. Trouble is that civil servants or someone had put the review into the most appalling jargon. Poor old Alan Johnson, who he must have secret hopes of becoming leader of the Labour Party sometime, maybe not so secret, had to trot out this incredible verbiage, which really had Tories laughing their heads off, and indeed many members of the press and the public gallery. He couldn't just say, we're going to get things right. He said, we must chart a path towards achievement. He demanded a strong clinical voice. That means doctors getting their twopenneth elevated through the roof, by which he meant the review. Ronald Reagan had a favourite story about optimism. A boy wakes up on his birthday and all he can see outside in the yard is a great pile of horse droppings. He grabs a spade and starts merrily digging through it all. With all this manure, he says, there must be a pony. Anyway, Mr. Johnson tried desperately to find the pony. He wanted to chart a path for the future, develop new models of care based on extensive engagement. He needed the NHS to be on the front foot. What on earth does that mean? It's a term from cricket. At that point, MPs finally lost it, and they sat back, nodding happily, waving their little legs as they heard about freedom to focus, openness on quality of outcomes, accounting for the whole patient pathway, opening new chapters. Finally, the Tories accused Mr. Johnson of planning more top-down management. He seized on this. The Honourable Member says we should have bottom-up solutions. At last, something we could understand. Fewer suppositories, says the Health Secretary.
Ivan Lewis, you are a health minister, so I'm going to turn to you first. Doesn't Simon Hoggart have a point? This is yet another review telling the NHS to do what it should be doing anyway, which is providing good clinical service.
Well, no, Alan himself said he didn't invent the term dashboard as he read out the statement. But the serious point is that we've essentially over the last 10, 11 years fixed the foundations of the NHS. Record levels of investment, waiting times down to record low levels, more doctors, more nurses, hospitals being upgraded. The challenge now is to move to the next stage, a focus on quality, patients having a right to not just good medical care, but respect and dignity, being treated as individuals, more empowerment to the front line in terms of staff being able to innovate, make the right decisions about patients, and a much different relationship between doctors and patients. So patients have better information, are more informed, more control over their own care. And of course also responding to a new world where we want to shift to prevention rather than just treating people when they're sick, actually supporting people to prevent them from becoming ill in the first place. What this is essentially about is moving from having sorted the basics out to moving to an excellent and world-class health service.
You say it's important to fix the foundations, sort out the basics, but couldn't this government have said on the 2nd of May 1997, the first day of government 11 years ago, that what's important is clinical quality? Why has it taken 11 years?
Because we inherited, and this is what many people seem to forget, we inherited an NHS which was in complete crisis. There weren't enough doctors and nurses, buildings were crumbling, patients were waiting not months but years for basic treatments. And we had to sort out what essentially had become a basket case.
Polly, let me turn to you now. Ivan Lewis is saying there that the NHS was a basket case. This government needed to sort it out. You wrote a big article in The Guardian this week welcoming this announcement, but you did say that what's particularly good about this is it's going to end the sort of the macho approach of previous Labour health secretaries.
Well, it's not just Labour health secretaries, but the NHS has suffered ever since the very beginning. New health secretaries coming in and wanting to pull on the big levers, reform everything, change, move the furniture, change the structure. So we've had district, area, strategic health authorities, regional health authorities, and every time somebody comes in, they move it around again because there is no perfect solution as to how to run the NHS. And I think at last, after 10 years, the government's got that message. Actually, it's not the great big pieces of furniture that matter or that people really care about. What really matters is how people feel about the way they're treated. When you go into a hospital, is it clean? Are people nice to you? Do they treat you with decency and dignity and respect? And I think they've done the heavy lifting. I mean, I've covered the health service for more years than I wish to recall.
But not since the foundation, let's just be clear about that.
Yes, not quite since the foundation, but every single winter. I mean, under Labour, previous Labour and Tory governments, there was always a winter crisis when old people got sick and had to come into hospital, there weren't enough beds. And then there'd be a spring crisis when they run out of money and had to close wards before the start of the financial year. And we just used to put it in the diary as things we covered every year. That hasn't happened for years and years. The spending that's gone into the health service, and people say, where's the money gone, has changed everything about the health service. Many more doctors, nurses, and people now, amazingly, I never thought it was possible, actually treated on, you know, get on off the waiting list within an average of 4 weeks. You know, that used to be the major rationing system of the NHS. And I think that's amazing. And, you know, one of Labour's great achievements, we may not realise it until it's over and it begins to go into reverse again.
John Carville, you're the Guardian social affairs editor. You've been reporting on the Darzi Review and indeed you cover the NHS very carefully. Can I just ask you, what do you say to the Ivan Lewis explanation, which is that this government inherited a basket case, they had to get the funding right, and now they can turn to the really important issues like clinical care? Do you think that's fair, or do you think there was a bit of a mess in the last 11 years?
I think it is a bit fair. I think the NHS was in an absolute mess, but I do think that 11 years has maybe been rather a long period to start talking about quality. I wouldn't maybe talk about the 11 years. I think I'd talk about perhaps the 8 years since the NHS plan. I can see that that the money did need to go in, but it appears to have gone in without extracting that much extra productivity from the staff. It does leave people with the impression that that the NHS has been awash with money. I think maybe a little bit more of this quality talk with hindsight would have been better a bit earlier on.
Ivan Lewis, isn't that a fundamental point that John Carville makes there, which the Tories are picking up on, which is that there has been this record investment? Tony Blair famously went on the Frost Show in January 2000 and said, we will increase NHS spending to the European average. There's been this shed loads of cash, but you haven't seen the same increase in productivity.
Well, all I would say, Nick, is 90% of the population said The Guardian was a brilliant newspaper and the Labour government was absolutely wonderful. I'd settle for that. 90% of the people in this country speak incredibly positively about the health service, particularly those people who use the NHS rather than those people who read about it. By the end of this year, we'll have a maximum 18-week wait for the moment you visit your GP to the minute that you go to the operating theatre. We know that we're introducing, for example, psychological therapists for the first time, so the people who have mental health problems can access to those therapists. We've paid staff, and I don't apologise for this, better rates of pay. Most staff in the NHS now are better rewarded. And we have thousands more doctors and nurses and the kind of equipment you need to make best use of modern diagnostics. So the idea that all of this money has come in, gone into the health service, and we haven't got anything out is complete nonsense.
Polly, can I just ask you, we were talking there about the Tory criticism that lots more money for the NHS has not necessarily led to a greater increase in productivity. Can I pick you up on one of the things that you wrote this week, that you said that the NHS constitution and what was announced this week is going to be particularly significant because it has to be reviewed every 10 years, and that this will essentially lock a future government, a future Tory government, into the level of spending that we have now. Can you tell us about that and how that will work?
Well, it's quite clever. I think every department should do it at the moment. Hammer down to the floor Labour policies that really can't be wriggled out of. If you have a constitution, which the Tories support, they were in favour of a constitution, it actually guarantees in law certain rights. And they are spelt out quite clearly that you will be, you know, what the treatments you can get, how quickly you can get them, and without undue delay, it says. So if waiting lists started going up sharply, if people started not being able to get the treatments they wanted, not being able to make the choice as to where they had the treatment, the Tories would be in trouble. They'd actually be in breach of the constitution. And although it's carefully drafted so it doesn't bring in the lawyers, which I think is important, there's an appeals process. And I think that, it would become very transparent if the NHS was significantly less funded under a future government.
John Carville, can I just ask you how you see the NHS sort of panning out as a political issue? A few days before we had the Darzi review, we had a Conservative Green paper on the NHS, and they said they would end the tick boxes culture. There would be no more centrally imposed targets, and what we'll be doing is having measurable outcomes. Now, that sounds reasonably similar to Darzi. So are the Tories copying Darzi, or is Darzi copying them, or are there pretty serious differences?
No, I don't think there are that many differences. I think they're all following the same trends. I think central targets were needed at the outset to make a big difference, on waiting times that Polly mentioned. I have to say, I'm quite a fan of central targets, and I'm not entirely convinced that that getting rid of them is a good idea. The targets have worked in the areas that we talk about on operations, you know, replacement hips on heart, on cancer. But look at the areas where actually they're still not doing very well on waiting times. Look at talking therapies. What are some of the other examples? They're going quite out of my mind.
There aren't many, John.
There aren't that many, but audiology was the one I was struggling to think of. You're doing better on it, but there's still a long way to go. So I would like to speak up for that. And I'd also like to say that I think it sounds that we're being all a bit of a fan club for the Darzi report. I think what it did do was pretty good. But I think there are some areas on which it wasn't entirely transparent. His London report a year ago spelt out very clearly that work needed to shift out of district general hospitals. I think he wanted half the work to shift out of there, upwards into specialist hospitals where you need the specialist expertise to get the job done very well indeed, and downward to the, they were called polyclinics, to the neighbourhood centres. Now, that I'm persuaded by that logic, But the impact of that is that there's going to be stuff happening in district general hospitals. Their departments are going to close. Ivan knows about this. He had a little local difficulty when he was responsible for maternity of what was going on in the Fairfield Hospital in Bury. There are going to be huge political issues. I don't know whether they're going to be put on ice before the election. I don't know whether it's going to be a Labour government or a Tory government that's going to be overseeing them. But I think there's been a bit of blurring of the difficulties ahead as a result of the Darzi approach.
Ivan Lewis, a clear message from John Carville there. Bring back targets and we need more transparency in the Darzi review.
Well, I was waiting for the sceptical John Carville to emerge during the course of this interview. It didn't take that long, but longer than usual, it has to be said. I think what's quite unique about the Lord Darzi's report is that, of course, it builds on the fact that every regional health authority, working with thousands of doctors and frontline workers, has produced its blueprint for its own area in terms of what it wants to see happen to services in the next few years. So it's not top-down. It's those doctors, those nurses, working with strategic health authorities in every region coming up with a blueprint. And the very important thing that's changed as a result of the work that Aradazi's done is that, first of all, there will be clear principles for the first time that guide any changes to service. And the other point that he's made is that alternative new services must be up and running before existing services that people feel attached to are changed. And that is a really important point in terms of public confidence. I also want to make two final points. We've not mentioned this morning yet this very important right to drugs that have been approved by NICE. To try and minimise in the future the postcode lottery is an incredibly important new enshrined right. But also, Alan Johnson's made it very clear, we expect NICE now to speed up their approval processes in terms of drugs. And the final point is Conservative Party policy. It is the greatest irony that this party is now on the side of the vested interests as they were back in 1948. They are the mouthpiece in Parliament of the British Medical Association, not standing up for the patient, but standing up for the provider interest, where that provider interest is trying to sustain a status quo, which is not in the interests of patients. That is a very strange place for a Conservative Party that claims it's fit to be in government to be.
Well, the NHS was not the only political story of the week. Gordon Brown found himself ambushed in the Commons when David Cameron produced a letter in which the Chief Whip, Jeff Hoon, said that the Labour MP, Keith Vaz, would be appropriately rewarded for supporting the government in the 42-day vote last month. We asked Simon Hoggart to describe the scenes in the Commons during Prime Minister's Questions on Wednesday.
It was pretty lively, as of course it always is. We had a lot about Zimbabwe, nothing much anyone could do about that. But then we got on to the curious business of the 42 days detention vote a couple of weeks or so ago, in which the government scored a very, very narrow majority, thanks to a lot of people changing their minds at the last minute. One of them was Keith Vaz, a Leicester MP, who also happens to be chairman of the Home Affairs Committee and thus pretty influential. Anyway, the rumour has been going around for some time that he was promised a knighthood if he changed his opinion. He and the committee were very much against 42 days. Mr. Vaz suddenly came round. So David Cameron decided to false foot the Prime Minister, who said, "Can you confirm that no promises were made and no jobs offered and no rewards dangled?" Gordon Brown stood up and gave what my colleague Michael White used to call a trick answer. It was yes, meaning he could confirm it. David Cameron pounced.
"I'm grateful for that very short and very clear answer. So perhaps he can explain this. This morning a letter has been published by the Daily Telegraph from the Labour Chief Whip... from the Labour Chief Whip to the Right Honourable Member for Leicester East. And the letter says this: thank you for all of your help during the period leading up to last Wednesday's votes. I wanted you to know how much I appreciated all of your help. I trust that it will be appropriately rewarded."
Mr. Brown played the false naive, but he was thanking him for doing the right thing, and he did do the right thing. David Cameron said, "Once again, you're so unable to give a straight answer to a straight question. Don't take people for fools. What did he mean? Chief Whip should be wriggling with embarrassment." Gordon Brown replied he meant he was thanking him for his help. "Peerage," shouted someone. It looked very bad indeed. And of course, Mr. Vaz, or Sir Keith, as some people are already calling him, now probably won't be able to take the knighthood if it were to be offered.
That was Simon Hoggart. Sir Ivan Lewis, this is all a bit embarrassing, isn't it? Doesn't this show that there were all sorts of deals going on to win that 42-day vote?
Well, what I can say to you, Nick, is that Jeff Hoon's written to me this morning and said if I defended him on your programme that I could have any cabinet position that I wanted in the future. No, seriously, Jeff was having a joke in the letter that he wrote to Keith Fars. To be honest, the job he has at the moment, Jeff, he has to have a good sense of humour. There's a football song which goes, you're having a laugh. Jeff was simply having a laugh with Keith. And for Cameron to blow this up is, I'm afraid, typical of him at the moment. Never asked a question about the health service on its 60th anniversary. Didn't ask anything about the economy and people struggling with their household bills. And there is no scrutiny at the moment on the performance of this man. Is he a man of substance? Has he got anything serious to offer the people of this country? He seeks to be the future Prime Minister. And I'm afraid your profession, to some extent, is allowing him to get away with this very superficial and shallow way of dealing with the serious political issues in this country. Jeff Hoon was having a laugh, and I think most people accept that.
Polly, let me ask you, do you think this was a laugh, a joke, or do you think it shows that there were deals going on behind the scenes?
I think it's almost impossible to think that there weren't deals. I mean, when he had the DUP in and out of the office, people going, oh, we were going backwards and forwards right up to the very last moment. Why did they make up their mind at the very last moment? Presumably to squeeze the best deals they could. They're going to be scrutinised very carefully, whether it's Irish water rates or, shockingly, denying abortions to Northern Irish women, which is just a disgrace. We don't know what it was. I think it'll emerge in time. These things always happen. That's the dirty deals that whips do, I'm afraid. 42 days was a terrible Labour era. I find virtually no MPs or ministers who think it was a good idea, whatever they may say in public. In private, they say different. And it was a great brown blunder, I'm afraid, and prices were paid.
John Carville, can I ask you, do you think the government can plausibly laugh this off, or do you think it's difficult for them? This is pretty serious stuff.
Really, I don't see why we should be so appalled at the idea deals are done. I mean, for heaven's sake, this is about politics. And it's not absolutely pure as the driven snow principle. They get into a state and they have to do a deal to get out. That's what politicians do the world over. I'm not the least bit shocked by it. I'd expect it's par for the course.
Finally, Ivan, let me just ask you. You were saying that we should allow Jeff Hoon, the chief whip, to be able to make jokes because life is not great at the moment. Obviously, Labour is 20 points behind the Conservatives in the poll. Tell us, what's it like in the bunker?
Well, I think we've got to roll our sleeves up and we've got to stay focused on what matters to people. We've got to help people through the rising costs of food, of fuel, of utility bills. We've got to recognise it's difficult for people and we've got to act, not just say we feel your pain, we've got to act appropriately. Equally though, we've got to portray a clear vision for the future of this country. We believe in a fairer society. We believe in economic stability. We believe in eliminating child poverty, and we believe in leading in the world on issues like climate change, for example. So it has to be a combination of dealing with the very real struggles that families in this country are facing and speaking as though we understand that, because sometimes we appear a little bit remote from people's everyday concerns. And it's very difficult after 11 years in government for that not to happen. So we need to act on those realities and those concerns. But we also need to demonstrate that we have a superior vision in terms of values and practical policies focused around fairness and aspiration for the future of this country. And I believe if we roll our sleeves up, we stay united, Gordon is the best person to see this country through this incredibly difficult economic period, we can still win the next election. But we cannot afford to lose our confidence and lose our nerve. And we've also got to use every opportunity to expose the fact the Tories have no real solutions, no alternative policies. Whenever we have debates in the House of Commons, they never put forward any credible alternative.
Polly?
Can I just ask a question? You say that you've got to feel the pain of people at the lowest earners.
We've got to do more than feel the pain. We've got to act on that.
All right. Now, what does ACT mean? If you say both be fair and act, governments can't fix global fuel and food prices, does that mean that you've actually got to start doing the really fair thing, tax the rich more and give all that money towards taking low earners out of tax so as to compensate them for these price rises?
What we've got to do is get the balance right between people feeling a sense of fairness, whatever their income levels are in this country. Labour has got to stand up and be on the side of fairness. Equally, though, we cannot afford to be positioned as being against aspiration and ambition. And it's achieving that balance that is going to be crucial.
People are feeling the pain now.
I am not going to go down the road of second-guessing the responsibilities of the Chancellor of the Exchequer. In the pre-budget statement, he will set out what we intend to do to deal with the current economic difficulties and take the country through these difficulties, many of which are caused, as you've said, by global factors, and then there'll be the budget next spring. But if every minister has their own manifesto in terms of solutions to economic problems, that's what happened under the Tories when they started to implode. We have to be disciplined. You cannot set pre-budget reports and budget by amendments in the House of Commons.
But you said Alistair has to pain. Where do you get the money from? How do you do that?
Well, we have
what are the options?
That's why when Alistair is constantly being put under pressure to come up week by week with the latest solution, whether it be on petrol tax, whether it be on vehicle excise duty, that is no way to run an economy. We have to retain economic stability. That's important. Otherwise, everybody's mortgages will go under and we'll return to the days of mass unemployment. Let's not forget that we still have record levels of employment and we don't have the mass unemployment that we used to have. And we certainly, despite the economic difficulties that we have at the moment, have not tipped into recession. So maintaining that economic stability is not simply a slogan. It's crucial in terms of people's standard of living. Equally, though, we politicians and, frankly, journalists who maybe have savings, have capital assets, have got to understand what it's like if you're on a fixed income and you have nowhere to go when your cost of living rises. And we have to act to support those families through these difficult times. Not just feel their pain, but we have to take action. But it's wrong to take that action on a day-by-day basis through amendments in the House of Commons. It has to be through Alistair making the right balanced decisions. Yes, fairness. Yes, particular concern about those on fixed income. But equally, we've got to continue to make sure that the country can rise to the challenges of globalisation, for example, going forward.
Could I ask a question too? What is the point of political principle which says that topping up your NHS care is wrong, but topping up your social care is perfectly all right?
That's been the settlement since 1948, as you know, John. Alan has announced that we're going to have a review of this whole question of top-up. And Polly wasn't totally right about this question, because the problem is not when people choose to purchase drugs privately before NHS care or after NHS care. It's whilst they are at the same time as receiving NHS care, then choose to purchase drugs, which you can understand them doing in terms of hope. If you've got cancer and you feel you've got no hope, you can understand people feeling they're desperate and they're going to do that. But we have got to make the right decision on that. We can't allow there to be unintended consequences, which is why Alan has set up this review. The review will report in the autumn, and we've got to get this right.
Well, we've come full circle there by mentioning 1948. Thank you for that. That's it from this week's edition of Politics Weekly. Thanks to all my guests, the Health Minister Ivan Lewis, the Guardian columnist Polly Toynbee, and the Guardian social affairs editor John Carville. Politics Weekly was produced by Francesca Panetta. I'm Nick Watt. Join us again next week when we will assess the results of the Halton Price and Howden by-election. Till then, goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.